Like Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Just before last month's Democratic presidential debate in Milwaukee, a group of protesters demonstrated right outside the filing room where hundreds of reporters had gathered to cover the event.
They were demanding an increase in the minimum wage in this country to $15 an hour. As it turns out, the minimum wage was barely mentioned in that debate, but the issues of wages, job creation, and labor policies are recurrent discussion topics during the campaign season.
And they're not just issues in the United States, but internationally as well. They fall under the purview of the International Labor Organization, a specialized agency of the UN. Nancy Donaldson directs the ILO's U.S. office in Washington. She was in Milwaukee recently and visited us in the Lake Effect studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Give us some context for the work you do. I know the International Labor Organization has been around since, if I'm not mistaken, the Treaty of Versailles. What do labor issues have to do with international stability and diplomacy?
Everything. it was created by the Treaty of Versailles as an instrument of peace. The idea is that social justice needs to be fundamentally a part of a society for it to be peaceful, and also that the real social partners in economies need to find ways to work with each other, even if they don't agree all the time. And so we are a tripartite organization with business, labor, and countries at every level of our governance. And I like to say, even though we're almost 100 years old, that we're a very lively institution because we fight all the time. and we fight about issues, and we fight about labor standards, and we debate, and we do find common ground. And we hope that our work around the world with our social partners and with our 186 member countries is helping to advance economies, social justice, and create jobs.
Well, and so how do you go about that work? You know, where is it appropriate for you to inject yourself into those debates? Because, I mean, you don't create policy, correct?
We do. We set global labor standards, and that's been true since 1919. And so labor standards may come in the form of a convention or a recommendation. If it's a convention, after it's considered by our International Labor Conference, it's prepared and then it's debated 2 years in a row and they have committee changes. It's almost like a parliamentary process. When it's adopted, then it is ratified or not ratified by all the member countries. So it's a treaty-level process. We also have a supervisory system. That sounds a little boring, but what that means is that if you're an employer or a union most of the time, you can file a complaint based on violations of the labor standard structure and then have that considered in the system. And it's mostly about transparency and being able to bring people to account, bring governments to account. The issues that we are involved in that case are almost everything that touches the world of work. That can be things like discrimination against women or others. It can be issues involving unacceptable forms of work, and we spend a lot of that time on that now, including human trafficking, child labor, exploitive practices that are not acceptable. I would say half of the cases that are filed with our systems, though, around the world and by far the most, are around freedom of association. And that is the most difficult core labor standard to receive recognition and support and to work out between the partners.
Why do you think that is?
Well, and I've always said, I tend to say that we're the inconvenient partner of the ILO because we have stood for as an institution is that for everything to do with work, one of the core aspects of that is that there are fundamental worker rights and that worker voice is an important part of having and being in a decent job. Actually, let me just say, we have what we call the decent work agenda. But what that means is that jobs are being generated. You can get a job. That there are social safety nets that help promote in economies employment. And so that could be unemployment insurance or labor mobility or opportunities to have a good childcare system. So it's from birth to death in terms of those kinds of support structures. And the third thing is a voice about your work. And the last thing, which is very important to us, and we promote it all the time, is what we call social dialogue. be able to have dialogue about working conditions and other things that touch work with the key players in the economy.
And these are all under this umbrella term, decent work principles?
Yes. Those sort of four categories are how we measure, in some ways, whether we're talking about something that's a decent job or maybe it's just a terrible job.
But for being at the sort of treaty level, as you describe, these issues all still seem to be very much issues in a lot of places today, whether it's overseas or here in the United States. How does enforcement work?
Well, enforcement is mostly by pressure from peer countries and from others calling out and social partners calling us out, calling them out. And it's surprisingly effective at times, especially in a 24-hour communication world. We're in a much smaller globe, and things go around the world very quickly.
Yep. Is there an example of that you can point to? Not to put you on the spot.
Well, so let me say, if you could be called out by our committee of experts and by our committees for violations based on a case that had been filed, and you could go long enough in the system, a country could, that they could lose their membership in the ILO. That actually happened to Burma, Myanmar. And there are other countries where there have been fairly problematic issues. With Myanmar, they really lost their membership because of the forced labor policies in the country. And as you may well know, they have been able to pass laws, rejoin the Community of Nations at the ILO, and they are seriously working on opening up their economy and getting things squared away, dealing with child soldiers, dealing with child labor and freedom of association. So we're pretty excited about what's up there now.
In the globalized world, a couple of things seem to be going on, though. I mean, those of us in the industrialized world are more aware of labor and human rights issues, but also, our culture of consumerism continues to boom, which feeds into those labor issues. Is there a good way to break that cycle?
Well, what we think of how the issues are showing up in this way is, you know, how do supply chains work? I mean, we're talking about a global economy, and we're talking about impacts of globalization. And so there are, from what we have studied and we see, many good effects and not so good effects. So I'll say on the good effect side, the global supply chains create jobs, and they also, because of expectations of consumers, you mentioned the consumers, they expect that big companies with big supply chains are going to have clean supply chains where there isn't abuse of workers or they aren't exposed to dying at work as happened at Rana Plaza in Bangladesh, a factory where over 1,000 people were killed. And so there's a debate out there about whether boycotting makes sense and when and how. But what we see now is the expectations of consumers are that the good companies that they buy from and they're loyal to or even not so loyal, they expect them to have standards and to meet those standards. That's a good thing. The issue about where did my job go continues to be an issue everywhere, I think probably including in Milwaukee. And there have been plenty of job losses and job movements.
Well, and of course, one of the storylines from recent years has been the waning power of some labor unions in this country. Is there any way to stimulate economic growth and keep worker protections without a prominent role by labor unions?
Well, of course, I favor a prominent role for labor unions. And that's one of the best ways to have competent partners in each side of the sector to help drive more economic growth. But there are many different ways that workers are finding voice in addition to when they have a chance to organize or be in a union. And that can be worker associations, farmers' collectives. There are really interesting partners that we've worked with, such as the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and that is to bring out the issues of domestic workers, and that's, you know, those are individual employers, or the Guest Workers Alliance. The idea that you come together and you find a voice and you bring that voice to pressure for better situations can happen, and certainly can happen in the political and legislative context as well.
How significant an issue is the minimum wage in this dynamic?
Well, let me say we think, and we've actually studied minimum wage around the world, the ILO thinks that raising the minimum wage appropriately, and it's different in different places, is a critical tool for addressing what has become a growing inequality issue around the world. And wages is one of the best ways to get more labor share. So when we talk about labor share, it's the actual dollars that are earned because of your labor. So it's not a particular union or anything like that. And then there's the share that capital has, which has grown and clustered and not been necessarily generating a lot of productivity or economic growth. And so the issues around wages, and it's very exciting, mostly state-led and city-led movement going on in the U.S. now. Nearly half of the country now has raised the minimum wage or gotten on a track to do it gradually to have the right impacts. And that's good for the American economy and for people who hope to be in a middle class and feel like they lost ground.
How would you like to see the debate over work defined in this current election cycle, or framed, if you will? I mean, are there questions that ought to be asked that are not, or do you see the candidates, whether you agree with them or not, at least addressing the right issues?
I would love to see the candidates in one of these town halls or in the debates be asked to talk about what they would do to generate jobs. And I would not be surprised in any town hall if someone who just wants to know, what does that mean? If you want to generate jobs, how does that work? Because there's an absence of enough airtime or something to get something concrete from the candidates. And they do have different views and different policies. I'd love to see that fleshed out.
Well, Nancy Donaldson, thank you for helping us flesh out some of these questions and the work you do.
Thank you very much.
Nancy Donaldson directs the Washington Office of the International Labor Organization, a specialized agency of the United Nations. She was in Milwaukee recently to speak at the UWM Institute of World Affairs.